Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100 megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
High noon here on WEEI. It's Tommy Tuesday, which means we're joined by Tommy Curran of NBC Sports Boston. A lot going on with the Patriots. He had a one-on-one yesterday with Mike Vrabel. Some interesting comments about his working relationship with Elliott Wolff, among other things. Tommy Curran, how are we doing this week?
I am great. How are you?
Oh, we're doing excellent as well. Mm-hmm. What'd you think? What were your general impressions of Vrabel press conference, your one-on-one, your big initial takeaways from Mike Vrabel, now officially Patriots head coach?
I thought his messaging was compelling. I thought it was organized. I thought that, and I do believe that he comes in with a very realistic appreciation for the level of talent on his football team. I thought that was indicated by his what we need to do is become a team that can take advantage of bad football, and I'm not sure that we're able to do that yet. But that was the only indication we got of what he thinks of the team, and I think he's honest about the level that they're at. I thought he was very, very, very few, if any, quibbles with any of the messaging that he gave. Now I'm sure we're going to get into the Elliott Wolff roles, which I'm sure plenty of people have quibbles with, and the offensive coordinator searches, which I'm sure people have, their input they want to share too.
Yeah, all right. I think both of those are fascinating to me. Let's start with the Elliott Wolff thing. It jumped out to Jones and I yesterday how many times he mentioned Elliott Wolff during the press conference. Then you talked to him, and then he was on the Greg Hill Show this morning and brought Elliott up a couple of times unprompted. Wolf, as you can imagine, not the most popular person for Patriots fans after the draft and free agency and everything else. How do you view that working relationship? And once again, like last year, we have that question of one person does have to have final say if everybody in the room is arguing over the number four pick. How do you see all of this working out?
Start at the end. Mm-hmm. My understanding and belief is that Mike Vrabel will have final say. Elliott Wolff is in a support role. Even though the title says that he will be over Ryan Cowden, I don't know exactly the landscape there, how that will flesh out. But from everything I've been told and from everything that has been indicated so far, Elliott wants to be in a support role. He doesn't want to run herd on the personnel department. I'm not saying he's going to recede into the background entirely, but I think that his job safety and his short and long-term future are attached to his ability to say, hey, I want to help Mike. I don't want to argue with Mike. I want to find out what Mike wants and get that for him. So that's why I think Elliott Wolff is not going to be somebody who is, you know, unless all the indications that we're being given, I haven't been told this, but I don't think Elliott Wolff is here till April and then gone after the draft.
Yeah, so I didn't feel that way either, and I respect and, mm-hmm. and trust your reporting much more than even my own instinct on that. But, you know, when it comes to Ryan Cowden, who's going to be brought in, according to multiple reports, will he have more power than Ryan Cowden? If Vrabel's the guy calling the shots and Cowden is Vrabel's guy. How does that power dynamic work?
Yeah, I don't know yet. I think that it was reported initially by Albert Breer that Cowden would be beneath Wolf. Here's the interesting thing, and I think we saw this last year, and you guys saw it, anytime you work with people who are new, everybody gets in there together, and everybody wants to be pulling the oars in the same direction. So the number of arguments and the times that you actually get to somebody saying, I want this guy and I can't move, and the other guy saying, well, screw you, I'm not moving off it either, it just doesn't really happen. Mm-hmm. You eventually get to a point where you can agree on something. Now, why is it important in this offseason? Talked about this last night on Early Edition. There are very valid situations that might confront the Patriots given where they are in the draft. Someone wants to trade up to number four, for instance. Well, what are they going to give the Patriots? Will the Patriots say it's okay that we'll take 35 in the second round and next year's first round, whatever? Or does somebody insist on this year's first rounder? And who's the one who insists? And who's the one who says yes or no? I think it has to be Vrabel in this instance with the counsel of Cowden and Wolf. But if something doesn't work out, that's where the landscape is set for, well, you know what? I told them not to do that. So they better all be on the same page as much as possible, or it's going to just lead to the same kind of dysfunction that we've been seeing where, you know, success has a million fathers, failure is an orphan. That's what we've been looking at.
Offensive coordinator, you'd already mentioned it. It's going to be a massive addition or you know, importance this offseason. Mike Vrabel mentioned this morning there are a lot of candidates, a long list of candidates. How do you kind of handicap the field right now?
It was interesting. I think it was talking to the Greg Hill show this morning. I saw the quote that wasn't listening. But did he say that I have a relationship with Josh?
Yeah, he talked about Josh McDaniels. We played it back, Jones and I, and I guess it was brought up. Gronk suggested you call Josh McDaniels first. And he kind of had like a pause. He's like, yeah. And then he kind of went on to say, like, there's a lot of guys. Like, he knows Josh, but.
And Greg asked him directly, is he on the list? He said, yes, but it's a long list.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. When you read, I have a relationship with Josh, you don't get the same, because usually when you know somebody as long as Mike's known Josh, you'd say, I have a good relationship. So I didn't know whether to infer anything there. I do know that Josh McDaniels would be on the list. I think he would be a good hire. Tommy Reese on the list as well, but I think those two would be the leading candidates. And I think that Mike has a leaning. I don't know what it is. But if I'm looking at this Patriots team and the work that needs to be done, I would probably, if I was hiring, and I know that there's plenty of fans who feel differently, I don't know why, but they do, I would think that Josh McDaniels would be the best fit. Do you guys feel the same way?
No, I don't. I would lean, you know, if it's Tommy Reese or McDaniels, maybe McDaniels. I'd go to McDaniels, but I don't love the idea of hiring McDaniels. And let me just give you pushback on why maybe some
would
fans
feel
that
way. Would you go to like Nick Cayley or something? Go ahead.
Yeah. Like
Tanner Engstrom.
Yeah, the McVay tree or somebody from Dallas. Sure. Like a name came up today. I'm sorry, Detroit. A name came up today. Mike Reese threw out the name Dave Ragone, who I guess worked with Vrabel in, I think, Tennessee and Houston, but definitely in Tennessee, and he's with McVay now. That, to me, sounds like an intriguing name. Is he ready to be a coordinator? I have no idea, but I'll give you a reason why maybe some feel like you could go Tommy Reese over Josh McDaniels. It would be the style of offense and the language in the offense, and you don't want Drake May starting over again at square one. I think that's the one you hear the most.
That's huge, and that's a Patriots player who had a very good season this year said that to me. Just before the final game, the last thing you want to do with Drake is make him start over again, because that's year one to year two. He didn't say this, but this is me continuing. The year one to year two jump is critical. And this will be what the, unless McDaniels comes back, it'll be the fifth offensive coordinator, 21, 22, 23, new guy who was 23, Bill, 20 O'Brien, 24 was Van Pelt. It'll be the fifth coordinator in 5 years at the Reese. One aspect of this, too, to bear in mind, and what's the reason that Matt Patricia and Joe Judge, in part, were the offensive coordinators in 2022, it was because, at least it was stated to me, that Bill was tired of the flight risks that he was having from younger offensive coordinators. And maybe Vrabel would look at McDaniels and say, he's been a head coach twice. I don't know if he yearns to be a head coach at this juncture right now, or if he would like to have the stability of coaching near where he's living right now. So with a Nick Cayley or a Tommy Reese say they come in, the Patriots go 13-4, they make it to the AFC Championship game, and Drake May throws for 5,100 yards. Tommy Rees is getting interviews everywhere.
Do you feel like, so right after the season ended, an hour after the season ended, they fired Gerard Mayo, but the rest of the coaching staff, it had all been, you know, crickets. There's not any word on that. How likely is it that there's a complete overhaul and anybody who was a certainly coordinator or position coach is moved on from?
I think it's, I would imagine because Mike has had the time in this off season or in his, you know, bridge season to find out who he would bring in around the league, that he would probably be more prone to replacing a lot of people than others. You know, if you were coming into this organization kind of cold and you had coached all year long, you might say, well, is there something I can use here? And you'd give it a shot. I think that Mike probably has had a long time to align what he wants as assistants. I don't know who's safe and who isn't. And, you know, some of these guys might be listening to the radio as we speak and talking about their jobs as assistants. I'm sure that they're on pins and needles themselves. I don't know what his leaning is with the assistants on staff. Like, for instance, did Scott Peters really suck, or was he just provided as an offensive line coach with players who couldn't play?
Yeah, hard to tell.
Hard
to tell on that one.
No, it is. I dare on the side of caution and just clean the whole thing out. But, you know, we'll see where that ultimately goes. I think Rees had the report. They're all kind of told to stay on vacation and wait until they hear about their futures. It's Tommy Curran, NBC Sports Boston. He joins us every Tuesday on a Tommy Tuesday here on Jones and Keefe on WEEI. Vrabel had comments, I believe these were to you, Tom, about Elliot Wolf and how Wolf had some restrictions on him last year, which I took to mean free agency. Maybe I'm misreading that. Do you think there were restrictions on Elliot Wolf? And do you think that's an indication that maybe there won't be restrictions this year and they're ready to spend?
Yeah, my understanding is that was more related to just time, the amount of time Elliot had to develop things. He was spread thin, as many people were, because there were so many people in different positions for the first time within the organization, that what Mike was alluding to was the amount of time that Elliot had to invest. It wasn't a money thing.
Any idea on defensive coordinator? I think, you know, we've had so much attention on offensive coordinator,
you know,
GM
stuff. I'm honestly leaning on Rees too. I'm leaning on Rees's list too. I'll be completely candid. I've been so kind of enmeshed with what Vrabel's doing and his messaging has been, and I'm more relying on the Rees list.
Okay,
Terrell Williams, Shane Bowen, those names. Those are kind of the ones that he highlighted today. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I've been looking at the offense a ton and talking to Mike and trying to vet what's going on with the coaching search. And, yeah, it's friggin' important. I mean, you look at this draft and the fourth overall pick, you could have easily said offensive line forever. And now you look at it and you're like, well, could Abdul Carter be the guy that you want to bring in? Because you don't have a pass rush. Should you go defensive end and marry that, that makes Christian Gonzalez even better. So I think it's going to be fascinating to see what a player and coach like Mike Vrabel, with his sensibilities, does at number four, and who is his defensive coordinator, and how do you deploy a guy like, how do you generate, who is this person who will come in and figure out how to generate a pass rush?
Another one for you is this morning he brought up A.J. Brown, or maybe the morning show brought up A.J. Brown, but he spoke about him. And, you know, the three best seasons Mike Vrabel had in Tennessee, A.J. Brown was the number one receiver there. He's now reading books on the sideline and doesn't seem to be going great in Philly, even though they're winning. A lot of times you see head coaches bring in former players with them as well, not just former assistants onto their staff, but former players. Anything there? Any kind of chance of the Patriots swinging a trade for someone like specifically A.J. Brown?
Specifically A.J. Brown, I think we'll see how things go with Philadelphia throughout these playoffs and how successful they are. He might feel more, you know, comfortable staying there if they have great success. We continue to circle up on A.J. Brown here because it makes sense. He would be the exact kind of fit. I think he is, believe it or not, I think he's underrated. I think he is a freak, and he is one of the top five easily in my estimation, even though he doesn't get the same Pro Bowl and all pro recognition. To jump off of that, though, I think the Patriots' best bet for improving their wide receiver room is via trade. I wouldn't spend all my time trying to get T. Higgins first and foremost and spend $33 million a year on him, even though he's terrific. I would try and find a trade for a receiver, because when we look around the league, whether it's Stephon Diggs, whether it is A.J. Brown, whether it's Tyreek Hill, those guys were acquired via trade and brought into an organization. So maybe that's where this personnel group, because free agency sucks. It's not the same as it was. It's the good players don't get to free agency because right now there's so much TV money, teams don't know what to do with their money. So they sign everybody who is even remotely competent on their own team and bring them back. So you're not going to have, like, people keep saying, well, fill the offensive line in free agency. They would have done that last year if they could have. They couldn't. They had Jonah Williams and Tyron Smith were the only two tackles of note who were out there, and Trent Brown. So there was nothing they could really do. So that's, to me, you have to get imaginative with trades, especially at wideout.
Last one for me, Tom. Who do you got this weekend between the Bills and the Ravens?
Oh, so great. These games are going to be really fun. I'm going to take the Ravens. That's my Kyle Van Noy solidarity.
All right. Very good.
Okay. Nice. I was going to say the last one for me, Tom, you know that, well, you're in the Scoops game. Keefe is in the Scoops game.
Yep.
Keefe has come under fire from Brad Marchand, maybe a higher status player than maybe say, oh, I don't know, Monty Beisel. But do you have any any stories or advice for Rich Keefe coming under fire in the Scoops game?
Well, I did say to Monty as he was yelling at me, I said, go ahead, I'll be here longer than you.
I'm not as confident though, Tom.
Marchand's a free agent, Keefe. We already outlived Mayo.
He's a pretty good player.
We already outlived Mayo, Keefe.
He's
so
not
we'll,
Monty Beisel.
We'll see. True. How many fans even are aware of the Monty?
What was that, 06? When was that?
It was when Brewski was out with the
05.
Stroke, right? Yeah.
05, okay. Yeah.
05, I think. Yeah. I feel bad.
Why?
Well, Tom's been here 20 more years.
Either.
Yeah, but why?
That's the kind of thing you would – that's a smart-ass comment afterwards. I'll be here longer than you. Let's think.
Well, it's a good line, though.
That's the kind of thing you're only going to say in a locker room when there's 38 people around, and I know he's not going to whack me in the side of the head.
Correct.
Nice. Well, that was a good comment,
yep,
and you ended up being right. As usual, Tommy Curran, usually right. You can check out his work, NBC Sports Boston. He joins us every Tuesday here on Tommy Tuesday, Jones and Keefe, Thursdays with WEEI Afternoons, and, of course, on Quickslants tonight. Make sure you check him out. Each and every time you can learn something from Tommy Curran. We appreciate it, Tom. Thanks so much.
Thanks, boys. Good call. Thank you.
All right. Very Tommy good. Curran, NBC Sports Boston, every Tuesday. Yeah, it was something like Beisel wasn't happy with Curran for whatever reason.
Probably calling him out for not being very good.
Yeah, because he sucked.
I'm guessing.
So he wasn't any good. And so maybe Curran called him out. He didn't like it. And then I think he aired out Stacey James, if I'm not mistaken. That was where I'm a PR guy. I think that was where that comment came from.
Oh, I think you're right.
I'm a PR guy myself, Stacey. Like, you're not supposed to make me look bad, stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
Honestly, it's a shock nothing like that happened last year with the Patriots. Like, as bad as they were.
Yeah.
And in 05, the Patriots were still, you know, still good.
Yeah, so I guess he's having a bad year. I got some quotes here.
Yeah,
why do you have to come to my locker and rub it in, Beisel said when approached by the Providence Journal reporter Tom Curran.
Oh, he's at the Providence Journal. Yep.
And then he goes, that's your professionalism? You slash me in front of everybody? What kind of bleep is that? How are you going to let him come over to my locker like that, Beisel said to Stacey James. You're not supposed to be allowing that bleep.
Yeah.
You're not supposed to make me look
Stacey.
Bad.
Yeah, exactly.
He goes, there, here's the quote you're looking for. I'm a PR guy myself. I know that's total bleep. You're not supposed to do that. That's crap. That's the last thing in PR that you should do.
You'll pound sand.
And he basically told him to pound sand.
Oh, yeah.
This story does not mention anything about Tom's good line at the end.
Oh, okay.
That was omitted from the story.
Monty Beisel, shockingly, was out of New England the following year, but he did hang on in the NFL for another one, two, three, four. You got four more years.
Yeah, that was the year they thought Monty Beisel and Chad Brown
Correct.
Were going to be like the replacements for Brewski and Who is the other stud like?
Willie?
Roman Pfeiffer, maybe, or Willie, like one of those guys.
No,
yeah.
was Willie still here in 05? Yeah, somebody else.
It was like Pfeiffer.
Right.
It was like somebody, like two like stud linebackers. Like, we're good. We got these guys.
No,
like,
You know who had to fix it because they were so bad and Bruschi was out with the stroke? Vrabel had to kick inside.
That's right.
I believe.
Look at that. It's all coming together.
It's all full circle.
Landed it.
That's story time with Jones and Keith.
Yep.
I guess not the most advice there from Curran.
No.
I was hoping for some advice. He just said heavy fire is what he said.
He's like,
I can see it from Gillette.
So there you go.
These guys are going crazy.
If you missed any of Tommy Curran, it's up on the Odyssey app, AUDACY. Get that on your phone. Free, easy. You can take it with you wherever you go. It'll also be up on YouTube if you want to watch the full thing.
The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. Connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.
You might think financial crime is all about money, but sometimes it ends in murder. I'm Nicole Lappin, host of Money Crimes, a Crime House original podcast. Each episode features a thrilling story about the dark side of finance and how to protect yourself from it. Follow and listen to Money Crimes, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House Studios, available on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
On the topic of Elliott, and this may not be the case, but it seemed like the case in Tennessee was that there became an issue when it came to you earning full roster control and kind of wanting to be in that role in addition to the head coach role. If that's accurate.
No, we didn't win enough games in Tennessee. I think that's the problem. that's never been an issue.
Are you comfortable with this arrangement?
I wouldn't be here. I wouldn't be here, and I think that through the conversations and the interview process and the conversations over the weekend with Elliott and with Robert and Jonathan and just trying to put a roster together in a program. That to me, that's the biggest thing. I want to try to put a program around our coaches, our support staff, our personnel department, our players most especially, that people want to be a part of, that they're proud of, that they invest time and energy in, and we can start to see results, you know, beginning here in the off season when we don't have the players, and then when we have the players in April, that these guys are like, okay, I feel like what we're doing is going to help me. We don't want to waste anybody's time, especially the players' time. So this is all very important to me, and it's all very calculated after having done it, you know, for 6 years in Tennessee.
That was Mike Vrabel this morning on the Greg Hill Show. If you missed any of it, it's up on YouTube. Subscribe to WEEI. You can also find it on the Odyssey app. Get it on your phone. Well, you won't miss out on anything from WEEI, whether it's the Greg Hill Show, Jones and Keefe, or WEEI Afternoons. I guess he was prompted in that case. He had already mentioned Elliott Wolf's name prior to that. I guess he was prompted in that case about the arrangement, not Wolf by name. But he continues to bring up Elliott Wolf over and over and over again.
He does.
I am encouraged listening to Tommy Curran with us, which is also on the Odyssey app and will be up shortly on YouTube. I'm encouraged by that. Like the number four pick, who's going to have say? He thinks it's going to be Vrabel.
Yeah.
So I asked him, fine, okay, so if it's Vrabel and Elliott Wolf is more of a support guy, great. What about Wolf versus Cowden? And I think the instinct there would be, well, Cowden's Vrabel's guy, so how do you think it's going to go? But then I got to dismiss Charles Robinson and Burt Breer, and I got to dismiss Mike Garofolo and all these national guys. Not to say I don't believe Tommy Curran, but even Curran and Phil Perry, I think, disagree on this one to a degree. I think Wolf's going to have a role. He just said Wolf's going to be here beyond the draft. So, look, if Vrabel has the say on the big decisions, I guess that's all I really care about. Wolf, you can make your seventh-round picks. And Vrabel's going to have heavy input on the number four pick. And Wolf, you can sign the, hopefully you do better than Chukwuma Okorafor and KJ Osborne, but sign the scrap heap guys. Vrabel's going to make a call on the big ticket items. Okay, fine. And then there's nuance there, but Vrabel's really running the show for at least what I care about. I don't think Wolf has zero power, though. And even listening to Tom, he's going to have a role and he's going to work with Vrabel, which based on his track record, I think is still scary.
But I think, yeah, no, it is. Like, there's not really a whole lot for Wolf to point to and be like, see, I did all these things that were great, so you guys should trust me. But then I think I'll trust Vrabel. And I know I keep going back to the same example.
But it's a good example.
But it's a really strong example where John Robinson was running things with Tennessee. He clearly had final say, and he thought he could pull a Steph Diggs for Justin Jefferson, and he traded A.J. Brown after Vrabel told Brown he wasn't going to get traded, and then they drafted Treylon Burks, who ended up being a bust. And that led to the downfall of Vrabel with the Titans. Led to Robinson losing his job, then Vrabel losing his job, and then the Titans being the mess that they're in right now. So I can't imagine he would go to a situation where that same thing could happen. Let's say, for just to make it simple, he loves Abdul Carter. He's obsessed with Abdul Carter. Vrabel's like, this is what we need for our defense. And even his guy that he brings in is like, I don't know. And Elliott Wolf's like, I think we'd be better off doing X, Y, or Z. I think Vrabel gets what he wants.
So let me present a scenario that applies to the A.J. Brown, and this is probably why having someone like Elliott Wolf around is dangerous to me.
Okay.
Drafting Abdul Carter, you're right. I think Vrabel wins that battle with Elliott Wolf. And maybe to Curran's point, they're not all going to be screaming at each other in their first draft. They're all going to try to pull in the same direction, and Elliott Wolf might be subservient to a degree. Now, Abdul Carter in 4 or 5 years is Micah Parsons. And now, which is great, but now, and this is what happened with A.J. Brown, you got to pay him. Or Elliott Wolf runs up the back stairs and says, well, yeah, I mean, Robert, you can pay this guy, or I can just find you your next guy in the draft.
He's like, well, Mike found us that guy.
Okay, but I'm just saying that's where it gets you into trouble. Like,
well, this does all come back down to
A.J. Brown. I'm sure Tennessee just didn't want to pay him. And when the GM, John Robinson, in that case, goes, well, I can find you another A.J. Brown, they go, yeah, let's do that. I can see that being a problem if Wolf survives. I can see that being an issue. That's a longer-term issue.
Well, regardless,
but it's why I would just blow him out and not even deal with it.
Yeah, but I think the bigger problem there would be Robert Kraft saying that we're not going to pay the guy. That, to me, like, whether it's Wolf or anybody else who's in charge there, they might say,
what owner wants to pay the guy when you go,
owners are paying the guy, though.
I can find you the next guy.
Yeah, nobody wants to, but, like, Minnesota didn't pull that crap with Jefferson. They did it with Diggs. And then they got Jefferson, and they're like, we'll pay him.
Yeah, I mean, eventually they paid. That felt like it got rocky for a little while, but they did blow out Stephon Diggs.
Oh, it's always going to get rocky, it seems like. Yeah. Like, these guys, they kind of wait, and then they wait for the next contract, and then they get to hold that one up against there, and then CeeDee Lamb gets to get whatever his deal is, et cetera. But, I mean, that's 5 years down the road, and that's certainly a possibility. Right now, they only have two guys on their team that are in store for paydays at any point.
It's totally true. But I'm highlighting an example of why I think just even keeping Elliott Wolf around. People are like, well, what's the harm in the meantime? Well, the harm is he survives. And then somewhere down the line, he's screwing it over. And, yeah, I don't want him having say in any of these draft picks. So I would have made a clean break. I think he was slightly better at his job than Mayo, only because I can't entirely quantify free agency, because ownership is a complication there. Which ties into something Vrabel said to Tommy Curran, NBC Sports Boston, yesterday in a one-on-one after the press conference. Let's listen to this again, because this sounds like excuse-making for Vrabel on Wolf's behalf, which I also don't love.
You know, having talked to Elliott, I think that, and getting to know him through the interview process, and then, you know, some over the weekend, you know, there were some things that maybe didn't allow him to completely invest in personnel.
Okay, and I'm not going to be... Time out. I know what Curran just explained away. That it's time. We might already be getting our first Vrabel walk back.
Well, yeah. Not it'll a be public, interesting if he does it, but no.
Not a public walk back, but like a slap on the wrist. Like, what do you mean by that, Mike?
Oh, it is more nuanced, though. It's a more professional way of saying it than, like, you know, burn some cash and, like, just put your foot in your mouth. Like, he did try to massage the situation, but it is pretty clear that they didn't really spend a lot of money on the team. So what is Elliott Wolf supposed to do?
You heard Curran's explanation. You still think that's what he's referencing?
I do.
Me too.
Yeah.
No. I don't think we're talking about time. We're talking about money.
Yeah, I do. Like, when you have to... You're waiting at the end. You re-sign some guys, sure, and then you wait around and you get the, you know, Chukwuma Okorafor and the Antonio Gibsons of the world. And I don't want to put Gibson in the same bucket as Chukwuma Okorafor. He played and actually played hard, but you know what I'm saying? Like, that, I think it has a lot to do with that. But we've also seen, even under Bill, it does kind of ebb and flow. Most years they're not spending at the top, but every once in a while they kind of surprise you. So, you know, they're very similar to the Red Sox, where I won't believe it until it happens, but there is a chance that they spend money this offseason.
And if you want to be charitable and say it is money, and like I'm sure ownership is saying, no, that's not what he meant by that, Tom. What he meant was it's time. It's not the money. It's time is what I'm sure he meant. Or even Vrabel, if he's asked about it.
Yeah, but either way, I guess he is making an excuse for Wolf.
That's true. He definitely is. Whether it's money or time, it is an excuse for Wolf. If you want to read it charitably, maybe he's like, well, he had restrictions financially last year, but this year there won't be.
Maybe.
And so maybe that's a positive way to read it. But here's the full excuse making from Vrabel.
And I'm not going to be able to watch every player. I'm not going to be able to watch as many players as they will. And I'm excited about them being able to consolidate that, to get me the players, to get me in front of the players that we need to identify and evaluate. And allow me to coach the football team and then, you know, come together with a shared vision about who can help us. And then, you know, part of that is also developing them. I mentioned that. I believe in that, teaching them, developing them, and then inspiring them, you know, through a connection. So whatever they've done, whatever they did last year, that was last year. And we're going to give them an opportunity to prove their value this year to the football team.
So I hear that and I go, wow, he's echoing what Wolf told Henry McKenna, blaming the coaching staff for not developing his draft picks. You heard something different, Keith. I think it's a good observation.
Yeah, I just think that it's such an undertaking, especially the next few months, where he's going to figure out his own roster and guys that are on the team. Mike Vrabel does. And then, oh, by the way, you have a draft coming where can you watch these like 100 receivers and boil it down, these 100 D tackles and like whatever. But the list is probably even bigger than that. This way, Elliott Wolf and his guys can take all those college players and don't whittle it down to one or two and be like, which guy do you like? Whittle it down to 15, 20, and then Mike Vrabel can take a look at those guys. And so, yeah, you might miss some diamonds in the rough or whatever, but at least give him less work to do and let him identify the guys he really wants to work with on the team. So that's how I view that. Like, you don't want to do everything, you'll get burnt out. That's why no coach is really the GM in football. Like, right. Belichick was the last one. He was the only one for a while. Then he was the last one. And I don't know if really we're going to see it again. Like, we're probably going to get situations like this, and there are in the league where, you know, big calls, big saves might be the coach, but you still need to have guys in the front office doing all that other, like, all that other scouting and stuff.
No, it's a good point. You know, Elliott Wolf, you go watch the wide receiver from Troy.
Yeah.
And
is it worth my time or not?
You go watch the tight end from Sacramento State. And you stack the prospects, you stack them all, and then I'm going to look at your top 15 or 20 at each position. You know, maybe wide receiver, you got to stack more than that. I'm going to look at them, and I'm going to prioritize. Me and my guy, Ryan Cowden, we're going to prioritize the top of the board.
It's kind of what Bill did in a way, right? What a lot of people would say is the scouts would do all this work. They'd even suggest a player. And then he's like, I like Tavon Wilson.
That's completely true.
And you're like, huh?
And I didn't hear that listening to it initially, but you said it the first time, and I hear it again the second time, and that's fair. So, look, I'm fearful Wolf is going to have a role. I hope he doesn't. And I hope it's exactly what you just said. Yeah, he's here because somebody's going to stack the draft board, and I'm going to have influence at the top, and that's all that matters. And Elliott Wolf, maybe you get to make the seventh-round pick because I don't care about it.
Yeah, right.
I'd be okay with that. So your read on the whole situation. We'll get into more from Mike Vrabel, not just with personnel. You heard his answers there on Elliott Wolf. You heard some of it this morning with the Greg Hill Show as well. But who's he bringing in on offense? Some names have emerged. Josh McDaniels specifically, he responded to that with Greg earlier today. You'll hear that coming up later on in the show, because on the way next, it's a Tuesday, 12:45, which means it's time for the Madness. Kiefer Madness next.
It's time for Kiefer Madness.
Kiefer Madness!
Richard Kiefer, I think it is. Rich Kiefer.
Who is that?
How you doing, ladies and gentlemen? My name is Joshua Adams.
What now?
It's Kiefer Madness.
Where's Kiefer?
Where is he?
Where's Kiefer?
Where is Kiefer?
Hey, Kiefer, you're a douche.
I was doing Junko Inoshima from Danganronpa.
I'm a firm believer in UFOs and Sasquatch.
That's funny.
Yo, Kiefer Madness is so hit or miss.
Kiefer's a nice guy.
Kiefer's a nice guy.
Okay.
Kiefer Madness?
It's Kiefer Madness on WEEI.
I bring it.
I would have done the same if I had found a kilo of crack cocaine.
Scotty Barnes is going to be all-star.
However, the uninvited guest in their house was more foul.
The man was captured on video using a sword to roast meat in a shopping cart.
All right, here we go. Time for Kiefer Madness here on Jones and Keefe, and it's brought to you by Awaken 180. Start the new year risk-free with Awaken 180. No subscriptions, no hidden fees, just a proven plan to crush your goals. Have 20 to lose? You could reach that by February. Have more? Do the math, then go to awaken180weightloss.com. All right, Jones, it is not a creature feature. I feel like it breaks the streak of like a dozen straight animal stories during the madness.
Yeah, it probably goes back to when Gerard Mayo still had a chance to keep his job, I'd imagine, at least that far.
That is true.
Yeah.
We thought he was going to be coming back for year two.
Back to the Bears win.
What a time. However, we are going back to Florida.
Okay.
Again, vast majority of these stories are from Florida, but we've also taken a little hiatus.
Yeah.
We were in the Pacific Northwest at one point, and we were in Texas even. But we go to Florida, and it opens. It's a little bit more visual at first, but let me just tell you. It opens inside of a vehicle. You're inside of a police car, and it's the cam footage.
Oh, boy.
So you just see a car at first, and then it might kind of bump into something. But here we go. Cam footage.
Hello, ma'am. Are you okay? I'm so sorry.
It's okay.
My friend's locked up.
Okay.
You good?
I was like, oh my goodness, wait.
Yeah. So hard to hear, but basically they're about to tell you what happened. So it's a police officer going up to the back of another car, then to the side of the car, and asking the woman if she's okay because he just hit her car. Okay?
Okay.
So police car hit a woman in a parked vehicle.
Okay.
Okay. So what the hell happened?
Yeah.
He says, you might have heard him there, my brake's locked up.
Oh.
My brake's locked
up. Well, that'll happen. Your brakes can lock up.
I guess it
can't
scare it. Real scary.
Yeah.
So maybe that's what happened. I'll tell you, though, it's not.
A Lake County deputy comforts a driver just moments after he rear-ended her. You could
not that way, John.
I was
not that with his vehicle. With his vehicle. Come on.
A Lake County deputy comforts a driver just moments after he rear-ended her. You could hear him say that his brakes locked up, but investigators say what really happened is much different.
All right, do you have a guess? Do you have a guess? So his brakes did not lock up. But he, in his patrol car, hit a parked car.
Yeah, I mean...
And it's not the brakes locking up.
You know, maybe he's inebriated, is something like that. Drinking on the job. Is that what's going on?
I really hope not.
Okay.
I really hope not. Let's find out.
That deputy's accused of watching pornography on his phone when he slammed into the back of that car.
That's right.
Nice.
The guy was watching porno whilst driving. He was driving his police car, watching porno on his phone, and then he smashed into a parked car.
I have a theory.
The lady was waiting for her kid at a bus stop. Yeah. Oh, you have a theory? I'm all ears on your theory. What's your theory?
I have a theory. Well, sometimes, Keith.
Yeah?
In pornog.
The old risky click?
Yeah. Well, no, sometimes
I don't know if it was a risky click.
In pornog, you get the dialogue is very engaging sometimes.
You want to hear it.
Yeah.
You need a story.
Yeah. And so the guy's a little lost in the story.
Sure.
And now he's like...
Not sure he's lost in the story.
I'm saying. So okay, he fell a little behind. He's watching. Yeah. He's like, boy, this is a good engaging story, but I came here...
Did he watch it with the closed captioning on?
For some nudité.
Puts the words on.
I bet you the Bluetooth connected to the car speakers.
Yeah,
son of a gun.
And so he fell.
The pizza man forgot the pizza?
He fell a little behind. He got locked up in the dialogue.
You better get back and get that pizza.
And he was like, whoa, here we go. And now when the good stuff started,
sure,
too late.
So let me
drive. I can't even believe it.
Let me drive my police car.
Yeah, well, he didn't intentionally drive. Yeah. He just got so locked up.
I'm not sure how
good storytelling
watching anything on your phone is while driving. Like an episode of Seinfeld would be dangerous, let alone a full-on porno.
Especially porn.
Yes.
Probably. That's because I could see the mind wandering a little bit among other things.
That deputy's accused of watching pornography on his phone when he slammed into the back of that car. Thanks for joining us here at 5. I'm John Brown.
Welcome. And I'm Luann Sorrell. Fox 35's Matt Trezza is live tonight in Lake County. So, Matt, that deputy actually ended up resigning after the truth came to light.
This guy bailed. He's like, I'm out.
I
can't defend this.
I don't know how you come back from that one.
Well,
you crashed into a civilian at a bus stop? Yeah. Why was that?
I was watching porn. driving the car.
I'm addicted to porn. Sex addiction. Maybe that's what you blame it on. Sex addiction.
That seems so 2000 and late.
Yeah, is it too?
Yeah, that used to play.
You got an hour to kill before the tow truck gets here.
She's like, are you trying to create your own porno?
It's always
like,
conveniently an hour.
Get out of here.
It's like, oh, excuse me, ma'am. I didn't see you there.
Saw this on a video. She's like, we need to report this.
Yeah.
He's like, well, I'm a police officer.
I am.
Terps put up some of the footage. You can literally see in the footage his airbag explode. That's not a euphemism. My airbag deployed.
That's working. I got to be honest. I don't always make it that far into the airbag exploding part of the video. I don't quite always
get there. 30 more minutes in this?
Yeah, that's right. He is no longer on the sheriff's office force here. Initially, he had told his supervisors during the investigation that his brakes had locked up, but later on, the truth did come out.
How do you grade the first excuse of the brakes locked up?
The airbag footage is unbelievable, by the way, on Twitch.
What was your question? And then his phone. He has to pick up his phone.
And the towel sitting on the middle console.
Oh, no! The whole thing is not good. What's the matter with you?
Sorry, my airbag went off. This never happens.
There wasn't a towel.
I got a lot on my mind.
Yeah, there was.
No. I got a lot on my mind. I'm stressed at work. Bud. Oh, no.
Driving, watching, and thinking of baseball.
That's right. Random baseball player come up an hour from now.
Yeah,
see if you can get it. But yeah, it's a real sad state of affairs for this guy. But my brakes locked up. Not great. You can see it right into the car. Terrible.
Oh, boy.
Attention.
There is a towel there.
I told you this towel.
911 assist call.
All right, so let me start that over. So this is it.
So you're seeing the footage if you're watching on Twitch or YouTube, but this is the audio of him kind of losing control of the car for a minute. He's a little preoccupied going into the back of this woman's car.
Attention, 911 assist is turned off. 911 assist call. Will not be made pleasant.
That is not the sound of pleasure, Jones. That is the sound of frustration. This whole thing.
It's a fine line.
I'm sure it was the first time he did this, though.
Yeah.
2980 County, 65, signal 4.
That's the moment of impact when Lake County did.
Is that what we're calling it now?
Yeah, the moment of impact.
I don't usually go much past the moment of impact myself. And what else is on?
That's the moment of impact when Lake County deputies say one of their own, now former deputy Tristan Maycomer, crashed into the car in front of him. The reason? Deputies say he was distracted by porn he was watching on his cell phone. After climbing out of his cruiser, Maycomer stops to pick his phone up from the floor.
Lady smashed into the car, airbag goes out, phone falls on the floor, and he's like, oh no. Like,
ew.
There's shame involved in it anyway. Yeah. This just kind of takes the cake. This is just too much.
He's like, I quit.
He cried. Like, we're just going to like suspend you. I quit. I'm done with this.
No severance pay. I'm out.
I'm going to move.
Yeah, please. Just move.
I don't want to be around anymore.
He crashes into her. It's, you know.
Yeah. It's a tough day.
Did somebody just crash into my car? He's like, ma'am, excuse me, I'll come out in a second.
We need to call the police. She's like, I am the police.
Ma'am? She's like, why are you just sitting in your car? I'm not ready to stand up yet, ma'am. Yeah. I'll be there in a second.
Doing paperwork from here. Yeah. It's fine.
Yeah, just stay in your car, ma'am.
Stay in your car. Freeze.
Gosh darn it.
As he does.
You with a flashlight.
Yeah, right.
Stay back there.
Get back. Leave me alone.
I'll get it in.
All right. That's not long. This is his actual reaction.
Gosh darn it.
As he does, you can clearly see that his seatbelt wasn't buckled either.
No kidding.
Oh boy.
The least surprising thing, he wasn't wearing his seatbelt. That would have been very restrictive in what he was attempting to do.
I think, you know, probably the thrill of, you know,
I'm not sure that's a
no seatbelt really just adds to it.
Deputies also noted that as a violation of professional practice.
Well, that's what we're hung up on, the seatbelt?
I was wondering.
Because this is all this other stuff. If we can't get him on that, we can get him with a seatbelt. Can't fire him, he quit.
After the crash, Maycomer goes to check on the other driver who was stopped waiting for a school bus.
Hello, ma'am.
Are you okay? I'm so sorry.
It's okay.
My brakes locked up.
Deputies say Maycomer also told them that brake problems caused the crash. Deputies say that was a lie, that his brakes never locked up, and he was just distracted by the racy images on his phone.
Be specific, if you could. For the trial.
Yeah, did video fall into images?
Say it again?
The video fall into images.
Could be.
So I'm asking, is he looking at photos or is he watching?
Oh, he's just old penthouses on his phone?
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. Just like scrolling through
trifold.
Scrolling through like link trees.
He's
and
a still
like
image
that.
Guy. Nice. Yeah. Nice.
He's Pilgrim.
All the hustlers.
Anything is possible with this gentleman.
We talked to the woman Maycomer crashed into. She didn't want to speak on camera but said she wasn't hurt and the sheriff's office paid to fix her car.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Florida Highway Patrol is heading up the investigation into the crash itself. We've reached out to them to see whether or not there's going to be any further charges or if charges of any kind against Maycomer in this case. We're live in Tavares, Matt Trezza, Fox 35 News.
They haven't shared the video with me yet, guys.
All right, move on. Nothing to see here.
I've been diligently trying to do my research, to get them to share that video with me. I am not sharing the original video.
That deputy is accused of watching pornography on his phone when he slammed into the back of that car.
Tough go. Tough go. But there you go. There's the madness today.
Yeah.
Yep.
Honey, you going to work today?
Yep.
Well, I actually meant to tell you about this.
And he was just distracted by the racy images on his phone.
It does say images. Billy's
images.
Right.
Billy, maybe Billy's right.
Just on GeoCities.
Guy
just
is old school.
You're going to get there.
What is that?
Wow. Okay, that was not where I was expecting
nope.
that to go.
Nope.
Which is usually how Kiefer Madness goes. Every Tuesday here on Jones and Keith. We'll get into your feedback, 617-779-7937. Let's get back into Mike Vrabel and his offensive coordinator choices. That's next.